It's an industry that I generally love. I have a passion for. I eat, sleep, I live for fitness.
No, you need to be obsessed. You need to wake up, think about it. You need to go to bed, think about your clients, think about your progress, think about what you can do better.
Genuinely, like, just be like patient and take your time. Like that is like, you've got to take it all in the right steps. You've got to nail what you do in person before you go online.
I don't like to talk about fear. The fears is usually something that makes your worries real.
Welcome to the Coaching Ignited podcast. I'm your host, Alex Povey. It's great to have you here. This show is all about peeling back the curtain on what's going to help you build the fitness business you truly want. And each week we bring on a new guest to share their stories, insights, and strategies so you too can take action and apply what you learn. The podcast is released every Wednesday on all the major platforms, including Spotify and iTunes. So make sure you go give that a subscribe, guys. Now, if you're a personal trainer in a commercial gym with 500 plus members and you want to fast track your income growth and learn how to sign multiple new clients a week, reach out to me personally through Facebook or Instagram and just drop me a private message so we can get the conversation started and see if you could be a good fit for one of our programs. All the links to my social can be found in the show notes so you can connect with me there. Now let's get into this week's episode. Enjoy the show. Hey, what's up, guys? Just want to say I'm really enjoying recording these shows at the moment. We're getting on some really cool guests who are really sharing some cool perspectives on life and business. And today we've got a really good guest for you. We've got Veronica Abrams, who is a confidence coach, and she's been through a lot of different experiences in her life that have given her some really good perspectives that she's going to share with us on the show today, specifically around limiting beliefs, authenticity, and confidence, because this confidence piece is such an important aspect of building a personal training business, a coaching business, any business in fact, and even your relationships. And so it's a really important topic for us to dial into, and we're really going to unpack why a lot of people struggle with self-confidence, self-esteem, and how you can rebuild yourself and create a better version of yourself as well. So really excited to get into this week's episode. I hope you enjoy it. Let's go.
All right. So we should be live with another episode of the podcast. And I'm actually really excited to do this show because I feel like we're going to get some really new perspectives today, Veronica. And I was looking at social media and I'm not entirely sure how we connected, whether I came across you, you came across me, but anyway, we connected. I was really drawn into like your profile and your messages that you're putting out there. And for anyone listening to this, go to the show notes now, click on that and go and check out Veronica's Instagram, which we're going to put in the show notes. Because I want everyone to get a feel of kind of your energy, because it comes across really well on
Instagram. Glad to hear.
It's very like refreshing and light. And I don't know, I was super drawn in. And like I said, I was gorging on some of your content before this episode, just to get an even deeper understanding of what you're all about. And I can tell you've got really good nature and moral compass. So I feel like you're going to give us a really good perspective today. So I've got loads of things I want to ask you, but I want you to give us an idea of how this whole journey into coaching really began for you.
So I personally, a few years back, went through my own transformation journey. I hit rock bottom. In the span of 6 weeks, my mother moved away. We were really, really close. I ended a relationship with somebody that I thought I was going to marry. And we turned around and said he'd fallen out of love with me. My whole friend group, because I'd been so busy building, I have a design and renovation business too. I love that creative aspect of that. So I've been so invested in building my business that, you know, friends move away, and it was this relationship and all these friendships that were connected to that I lost as well. My best friend moved out of province and I turned 30 within this like span of 6 weeks. You know, family's gone, partner's gone, best friend's gone, friend group is gone. You hit this milestone too, and it was just crickets. It was just crickets. It was like everything in my life had been built on quicksand and it just was gone. And it was devastating. As somebody who I pride myself in being compassionate and caring for people, I was like, had that moment. And I know I'm not the only one, where, you know, like stuff happens and then you're like, I'm a good person. I don't deserve this, you know? So that was my starting point where I started to spiral. I fell into a very deep depression, alcohol, drug addiction, because I was simply at this place where I was like, you know what? I feel like I did it all right. And what was it good for? Right. And so I spiraled for a time, and it was about a year until I hit this place and I was like, okay, you know what, Veronica, like you got to ask yourself this question. Do you want to die? Because on this, you know, path that you're going, there's a lot of uncertainty, and it's, that's probably where it's going. So, do you want to die? And I said, no, you know, I just don't want to live so sad. And I had to turn things around, and that there was that rebuilding of my life, my identity, my confidence, my sense of worthiness. And that was the beginning of my journey. I made a commitment at the beginning of it, and it's serendipitous how everything fell into place, because I didn't pursue coaching, but I said, you know what, if I figure this out, I'm going to help people. And then others started hearing my story and creating the space. They were like, yeah, we're going to support you. And it kind of evolved. I don't want to say I willingly went into it. It was a little bit of reluctance, but I made a commitment. And then life just is like, all right. So you've gotten through it. Now you're going to help other people. And that's how things came together for my coaching program.
It's interesting to hear that, because some of the best coaches I know have been through like these big challenges, like you said, where everything just falls beneath you and you're like, you're at a loose end. You don't know what to do. And you're in this almost dark place, right? You talk about depression and probably feeling pretty low at this point. And then you found a way out. You found a way beyond where you were. And I think a lot of people struggled when they get into those deep and dark places to get out. Maybe it's in life, maybe it's in business. Can you talk about what you did to then get to like that stable place again, where you were confident, happy, fulfilled? What was that process like?
So one thing I want to stress is, you know, life is, it can be hard. Shit happens, you know? And the greatest realization I had is you are not entitled to a good life simply because you're a good person. And that hurts. That truth really hurts. You know, because here I was like, you know what? I've been a good friend. I invited people into my home. I cooked for them. I was warm. I was welcoming. And I've got nobody now. And, you know, I invested myself fully into this relationship only to have it collapse. And, you know, family moved away. Everybody's thinking about themselves. You know, you're not out to get things from people. But when you look at all that, you're like, I'm a good person. I don't deserve this. I know I'm not the only person who's investing in a relationship only to be heartbroken and told themselves, I'm a good person. I don't deserve this. Or you're working in business and you go all out for a client and then, you know, they don't pay, or, you know, they start nitpicking over little things, even though you've gone above and beyond. You're like, I'm a good person. I don't deserve this. So very clearly, being a good person does not entitle you to a good life. So what does? And even though all those things were not, you know, necessarily my fault, obviously we make decisions that lay things into a certain order and events into play. But I realized I had to take personal responsibility. That's the difference between people who are resilient and people who are not. So people who are resilient, they say, okay, you know, I got to take responsibility for this. Like whatever's happened, happened. What now? You know, how am I going to act? How am I going to move from this place? People who don't take responsibility remain victims. And within a victim mentality, you will never be able to create momentum for change. So after all that, I had to take a moment and say, okay, you know, what's my part? What can I do now? Where did I go wrong? Where was I ignorant? Where was I, you know, nurturing self-limiting beliefs? And how did I create this world? Or how did it happen to me? So I had to take a moment and I realized that I had to create a culture very intentionally around my life. And I had not been intentional. I've been reactive. And whatever, you know, came into my life, I compromised on my own values. I'd compromised on my own needs. I'd compromised in, you know, my own beliefs and how I operated. And when I looked at that, I realized that I would have to realign my life with the things that I value and be super diligent and committed to them. And the beginning of that, you know, one is taking responsibility, but two is identifying what your values are. You know, I understand this from a place of business, but what about life? What about your actual life? You know, core values within business and startups and tech is like super trendy, right? Like these are core values. Why do you have core values? Because it tells you if you're on trajectory. That's how you self-audit. Core values are how you self-audit. You don't go by feelings. Feelings you can honor, but if you want to create a culture, cultivate an environment around you that resembles the things that you truly, truly love and value, you have to operate within those values. You know, for example, I said love was, you know, a value of mine, but I'd been in a relationship where there wasn't that mutual love and respect. I said love was important to me, but I gave love, you know, within friendships and didn't really gauge who was worthy of really being within my close sphere. So my theme for the following year was progress, not perfection, identifying what I valued. And when I look at clients in their life and when I looked at my life, if you don't have a good sense of identity and you don't have confidence, go and look at your history of if you keep promises to yourself. And that's key. Self-confidence, let's talk self-confidence, self-esteem, trust in yourself, faith in yourself. I looked back on my own life and I'd realized how much I compromised. A life of compromise, a life where you continually break promises to yourself, destroys your confidence. You know, people think, okay, if I go to the gym and I get this body and that, no, then I'm going to have confidence. Confidence is internal, and it's a result of you creating a track record or a history of trust and faith with yourself. So my promise keeping space, 20 pounds overweight, alcohol, drug addicted, still heartbroken, all these things. I was like, you know what? I got to get up and move. I'm not treating my body well. Even just from a simple standpoint, let's get the serotonin going. I can't control my outward circumstances right now, but I can solve for me. And I went out of my apartment, my loft apartment, hung a right and started running the stairs. And that was my promise keeping space. So restructuring and reframing things of where am I breaking promises? It could be within health, it could be within fitness, it could be within relationships, and reframe them as promise keeping spaces to help build your confidence and help inform your identity.
I love this. I really, really love this. And we're getting really deep here. And you explained it so eloquently and so simply that, like, when you break promises with yourself, then that's going to break the confidence that you have in yourself as well. Because if you're cheating yourself, how are you going to have any confidence to do anything? Because you're effectively not believing in what you do.
Exactly. Because
you keep cheating yourself. So it's kind of like a partner cheating on you. If they're cheating on you all the time, guess what? You're not going to trust them. You're not going to have confidence in them. And what you're saying is some people, including myself, and you've done it in the past, we've cheated ourselves. And so that's where a lack of confidence comes sometimes, because we're acting like a cheating partner. It's crazy.
Yes, and compromising ourselves. So what I did is I identified 5 core values, and I take my clients through this. We have like a list of 250, like what resonates with me, what resonates with you is going to be different. But we don't need to pick 250, we'll pick 5. Pick 5, define them for yourself. And so you've got your values, then you define them. And then the definition is your guiding principles. And when you're assessing your life and looking at promise keeping spaces, you self-audit according to your values. And this is what I realize. And so you build, here's two lines that are the most important thing that you can ever understand about confidence and identity. So you build confidence by learning to keep promises to yourself. Now let's look at identity. Just kind of switch the wording a little bit here. Every choice you make that's in alignment with your values further reinforces a strong sense of personal identity. Let's flip it. Every choice you make in conflict with your core values chips away at your sense of identity. Oof. Those are the two things. And I've been chipping away at my identity so that when everything was gone, and I'm grateful that everything was gone because it was life-changing. You know, sometimes things happen in stages and you don't really realize what's going on. So when everything was gone, everything that I thought I was about, everything I thought I was defined by, then I was left with nothing. I didn't, you know, it's one thing to feel now alone and abandoned. It's another thing to feel like you're a stranger to yourself. That's the loneliest place. If you don't know who you are, look at how you've been chipping away at your identity.
I'm getting shivers as you say this, like talking about being a stranger to yourself and not knowing who you are, because we're never stopping to think about what our true values are. I can honestly say that I think I don't know what my values are. I can't clearly define them right now. Maybe if I just sat down, I could probably map it out. I know what my standards are, but I don't know what my values are. Is there a difference between irrefutable standards and values? Are they different things?
So let me give you an example of mine, okay? Because everybody's is going to be different. So I took some time, and it's true. If you were to take some time to sit down and really assess it, you probably would be able to define those. But you know how things are, even in business, you need to define the things in order to know if you're on track, right?
Yeah.
So me personally, the first three were really easy for me, and it took a couple weeks to get the other two. So my values, I decided, are love, integrity, gratitude, courage, and authenticity. Those are mine. And then I define them. I call these guiding principles. So love, to operate from a place of kindness, compassion, and respect towards others and myself. Because the culture that you have within your life, it's two-pronged. It's how you operate, but it's also what you've allowed to filter in. So if you think of your life as, okay, you're king, queen, whatever you want to call it, of your city, okay, and it's walled in and there's a gate. Now, you are responsible for the culture within that city. Every person, everything has a role and needs to be up to that standard of what it is that you value, because you're cultivating this. If you allow somebody to come in who does not operate according to that value, we know that one person, one thing can just, one bad apple can ruin the whole bushel, right? So there needs to be with so much dedication, this commitment to creating, cultivating, and protecting the culture around your life and using your values to self-audit. For example, integrity. Okay, I define integrity that the proof of integrity is when your words and your actions align. So that's two things, right? I hold myself to that standard. I hold my closest friends to that standard. I hold my family to that standard within my city and my life. Now, but there's another part of that too. It's like, you know, I also need to make sure that my words and my actions align. And a part of that is being very careful what I promise. As somebody who's empathetic and a people pleaser, I was just yes to everything, right? But that's not an integrity. Sometimes I could follow through. Sometimes I couldn't. So defining those values and then committing to two-pronged how you operate, but also what you allow within the gates, within your city. And it's not vindictive to not allow things in or in close vicinity to your life. It's responsible.
You mentioned that one of your values was authenticity. And I see this showing a lot, up a lot in your content, and I've really come to realize how important this is in business as well, particularly with like content creation. If you're a coach and you're trying to position yourself and build know, like, and trust with the market, right, being super authentic and letting people see the real you, and I see it pop up a lot in your content. I'd love to get your viewpoint on why so many people struggle with being authentic. And why that is. Why do people struggle to be authentic?
I believe that the core of that is this desire for love and trying to solve for it extrinsically rather than intrinsically. That love and acceptance is really the core of all of that. You know, why wouldn't you be authentic? You know, if you didn't fear that you wouldn't be accepted, if you didn't fear that you wouldn't have an abundant life that's in alignment with that, if you didn't fear that you would be able to make amazing connections that really resonated with you. So not being authentic, I think, really comes from a place of fear rather than authenticity coming from a place of love. And, you know, there's a beauty within authenticity, and there's a beauty within causing or allowing polarity within your life. And when I talk about this with my clients, I say, you know, oh, if I do this, then people aren't going to like me. If I do this, then I'm not going to get these business opportunities. You know, I'm not going to be perceived as professional. I'm not going to, all these things. And it's all linked to loss. And we're programmed, and it just makes sense for us to look at loss and think, okay, I've just lost something. But there is this other side of loss where some loss is actually going to lead to gain. See, if you don't present your authentic self towards your clients or your community, then you don't know who you're losing out on. There's people, and there's a niche, and there's clients that you have to gain, but you will never gain them until you operate from a place of authenticity. There will never be access to that part of your life because you're holding on to aversion and benefits that are only in alignment with this like fake version of who you are. So there are circumstances where loss is not just loss. Loss is going to lead to progress, but we only see what we're potentially losing in the moment rather than the access that we will have on the other side of our authenticity.
So being unauthentic, what are some of the dangers by doing that and almost like cheating yourself again because you're not being true to yourself and you're trying to be something that you're not? And almost wear a mask. What have you seen that do to people trying to maintain this image that is not real? Because I see it a lot, right? Because people are acting up to maintain a certain facade when deep down they know that that's not a true representation of themselves. What is that doing to them?
So one is you're losing out on access to the abundant and aligned aspects of what you could receive within that identity and space. So you're just giving it up. So yes, you might temporarily have some things, but what you're doing is just you're going to be staying on one side of the fence, and you'll never see that other world. Another thing too is, you know, I talked about being extrinsically versus intrinsically motivated. So as a human being just in this world, like, you exist, and it's just a remarkable gift. And, you know, depending on how you look at it, it could even just be a fluke, or you're predestined to be here, however it is that you really want to approach it. But you've got this blip in time. And I truly believe that the human right is to live abundantly and fully and your full authentic expression. That's your human right. So when I approach things, I approach it from, like, it doesn't matter if it'll work or won't work or whatever is going to happen. I have a right to fully express myself authentically within the space. Extrinsically motivated would be like, I'm doing this for external validation. The problem with going after things with, you know, the intent of having external validation is you don't build experiences and inform your identity, and it doesn't stack one on the other. It's like you keep starting from square one over and over and again. And it's a cycle of dissatisfaction, because you will never, that validation, if you even get it, it's short-lived. So I've seen people who are successful. So two people, let's say, same industry. One is motivated by external validation or extrinsically motivated, and the other is intrinsically motivated. So what you have is people who build businesses, empires, so on and so forth, and you can tell who's content at the top. You know, you could tell who has joy. You could tell who really just feels like they're expressing themselves fully. So the ones at the top that are really looking for external validation, this is where you look at burnout. This is where you look at depression, anxiety, families breaking down, because you're always on reset. Your life experiences are not building one on top of the other. And that's what you're going to miss out on. You're going to miss out on the joy of the human experience. You're going to miss out on the connections that you could have. You're going to miss out on the abundance that's in alignment and in flow and easy in comparison to the striving that comes from external validation. Not to say that life isn't going to be hard, but there's a flow that you can only step in within your authentic self.
I think it gets easier as you get older, right? I've noticed it anyway. As I've gotten older, I care less about what people think, and I'm more authentic to myself because I feel like I'm a lot more comfortable and I understand myself, and I've gained like self-awareness. I do a lot of journaling, and I kind of have worked a lot on my self-worth, mm-hmm. and my own belief systems. And so I think that's easier then to go out into the world and actually be true to yourself, because you've got that kind of inner confidence that we were talking about, mm-hmm. where it's been cultivated and I'm almost leaning into it. But I've just found with age, it's gotten easier. Maybe it's because I've gotten maybe a little bit wiser. I'm only 30, but I think over time you get that right. You get a little bit more comfortable with who you are over time.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, as long as you're taking, you've got experience though, without reflection there's no progress to be had there. Right. So I would definitely hope that with age and experience, we're able to look back and reflect on things. There are people who don't change. There are people who keep repeating the same mistakes, and life will take you through those same lessons until you, do develop enough self-awareness. And, you know, we were talking about responsibility, taking a moment to take responsibility for your life and reassess.
I want to talk about mistakes, and this kind of intertwines really nicely with forming right habits, because habits can help you avoid mistakes because they keep you on a good path of doing the right thing. And I'd love to talk about developing high performance habits with you and kind of your viewpoints or your methodology. Anything you could share with us on that topic?
Yeah, absolutely. So now going back to my own personal journey, I had a lot of things I had to work on. You know, like I said, it was between like health and fitness and addiction and depression, a lot of things. And my theme for that year was progress, not perfection. And it's important to approach things from a compassionate standpoint. You can hold yourself responsible and still be compassionate. So I made a choice to create these promise-keeping spaces, but I started, you know, in this Hollywood age, we love sensationalism, right? We love, you know, the big blow-up scenes and fire in the background and the big-time romance and extraordinary stories. And we approach oftentimes our habits and our promise-keeping spaces with that same sensationalism. You know, that's where you've got the January 1st, I'm going to go to the gym for an hour every day for the next bazillion years. And then you so that's a sensationalist sort of strategy, and it's not conducive to actually creating a habit. To go from zero to 1 hour of workout, or to go from really eating poorly to emptying out your pantry and starting a diet on a certain day, you know, beginning of the month. This doesn't work in sync with our own psychology. So we have this fight or flight response. And as adults, as we're established, we, you know, got neural pathways established, oftentimes it's really difficult to create that catalyst for change or that momentum unless there's pain or trauma. Those are oftentimes, and I know in my life, that was painful what I went through. So that was really a catalyst for me. So I call these gun to the head scenarios. So for example, if you go to the doctor and they tell you, look, you're pre-diabetic, you're going to be on medication if you don't change things within the next few months. That's a gun to the head scenario. Now you've got this, you know, response, and not everybody necessarily, but you're more likely to have that, like, okay, I'm going to change, right? or if your partner comes to you and is like, you know what, I've been telling you I'm really unhappy and nothing's changing. If things don't change, I'm gone. You know, I'm gone. I want a divorce, right? That's a gun to the head scenario. And it's hard to have that within life if you haven't hit your pain threshold. And we are in the self-development space where it's like, oh, but I really want this. I really want that. But you're still comfortable. So how do you create a high-performing habit when you don't have a gun to the head scenario necessarily? And if we think about it in the case of like, okay, we're trying to establish a neural pathway, I have a no days off strategy where take your goal, let's say if it's fitness, take your goal and work it down, distill it down to the simplest thing. Okay, you want to create a 1 hour morning space. All right, how about we do this? How about we create a 10-15 minute morning space? Not going to the gym, this is a lot of effort. You know, let's get some mat exercises going and we're going to create a 10-15 minute exercise. You don't earn the right to level up to the next time thing, to level up to the next exercise until you've established a streak anywhere from 7 to 21 days. So we go in 7 day streaks. So you need to complete a streak before you earn the right to level up because you don't have the neural pathway set to go from 0 to 100. You don't have that. You're working against your own biological systems, which says I'm comfortable or I'm not that much in pain. I have no incentive to change. So working in sync with your own evolutionary systems in order to establish that habit, you know, same thing when it comes to eating healthy. Oh, you're going to just empty out your cupboard. Do you know enough recipes? Like while you're sitting on the toilet, instead of going on Tinder, why don't you go on Pinterest and start pinning recipes? You know, and then what about we just fix your breakfast? And then once you've done that for 14 days, we'll move on to the next one. We'll move on to the next one. But see, this is practical, and these little steps lead to big change, but they're not sensational. Because when we go through setting a goal in our mind, we get hits of dopamine, you know, and you go, you get the good running shoes and you sign up for the gym membership and you get these hits of dopamine. And the thing is that you don't get that same satisfaction until you've completed a task. So you're in the middle of your workout and it hurts. It's uncomfortable because you're unpracticed. And what does your brain tell you? This is uncomfortable. We don't want this, right? So creating that space, one, it's a promise-keeping space. It's not about the fitness first. It's not about the health first. It's about informing your identity and creating a strong sense of confidence and identity. So reframing it, this is a promise-keeping space. I'm going to put my pride down for a moment, distill this down into a goal, and show that I can count on myself for 7 days, 14 days, before I earn the right to level up to the next thing.
I like the streak thing, like the 7 days, where it's chunked down into like manageable habits. Like you said, not starting and coming out the gate with, hey, I'm going to dedicate an hour every morning, because it's too much of a leap and there's too much room for failure in that scenario. It's kind of like going
force response if you do it that way.
It's just too much. Yeah, it's just too much. And I see it with my clients as well. Like you can't, if you want clients to get really, really good results, you can't give them too much at once. So if I gave people maybe 2 or 3 tasks in one go, thinking that I'm giving them loads to do, they sometimes get paralyzed by the fact that there's just too much. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like a buffet. Definitely. Sometimes when you approach a buffet, you're like, wow, there's a lot of food here that I could consume. And so it seems a little bit overwhelming. What do I eat? You overeat and it's not sustainable and it makes you unhealthy. And it's kind of like trying to take on all these new habits or setting big habits and actually not achieving any of them. So I love that part of like achieving a streak and then leveling up once you've earned the right. I love that piece. Once you've earned the right to level up.
To some extent.
Yeah. You know? And it's an easy win. It's an easy win if you can just tick that easy win off.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you're doing, is now you're banking wins. And what is banking wins? What is banking promise, you know, keeping promises?
Confidence is confidence.
You're literally creating that confidence within simple, intentional steps. And I think oftentimes what we see is we look at our goal and we think it's like, I'm here and it's a ladder up. But that's not how habits and disciplines and goals work. Think of it more of a pyramid. So your 15-minute exercise is a prerequisite to the 25, to this, to, and then the healthy eating. And that's why people can actually, at the top, they can take an actual intense discipline or practice. And because they've let all this, they've created, you know, this foundation supported by many practices, many disciplines, because they've done that. Even this one at the top that somebody would be like, oh my God, that's intense. It's not as difficult for them because they've established themselves through many, many different habits and disciplines that are supporting the ones above. So it's not like you know, just jumping to this. Well, if, you know, I run the stairs, you know what, if I go to on vacation to a hotel, or if I move to another building, I can still take that practice and do that there. Even if there's not a gym, I have fallback habits. So those little intentional habits and disciplines are so imperative to creating a high performing life and lifestyle and disciplines.
Yeah, we see that in business as well, don't we? A lot of people just want to come straight in. A lot of coaches that I work with and say, hey, I want to make 10K. But they've not made a thousand in a month, but they want to make 10K in a month. And it's kind of like jumping up to a level that is just not achievable because you've not taken the steps to even, you haven't earned the right to make that money yet. You've not done what it takes to make that money in order for that to be something that you can achieve. And it's a mental shift as well, because in order to make 10K a month, you have to have a normalization around making that sort of money and what it takes and who you have to become in order to achieve it. You have to become someone different that makes 1,000 a month to make 10,000. And then another step to 20 and 30. So what you're saying with these habits is the same parallels in business growth and creating business plans. You don't just create a $1 million business overnight. You maybe do 100K the first year. Then the next year you do 250, then 350. And then over the years and in a decade, you get to 1 million. It's the same with these habits. You get those streaks, you build the confidence, and then you use that to level up, right?
Exactly. And, you know, even in business, somebody comes in and they know that they should be doing outreach every day, a certain number. And it's like, okay, well, how about we just like distill that down? You know, what about like, instead of reaching out to 50 people or 15 people, I want you to reach out to 3. Start creating that ritualistic space. Again, it's a space and this identity, you're stepping into a distilled, simpler version of it. But you step into that. And this is why imposter syndrome is normal, because you have not stepped into that identity to own it and to be practiced in it. So you're practicing on a more simple, distilled version and creating, you know, using that as a foundation and stepping brick into like the next one, next one, next one.
I want to ask you about your why. I want to ask you why you do things. Like, have you ever sat down and really defined what that is to you? Like, what is your fire? What gets you up? Because I can imagine you've had that thought.
Yeah. I mean, again, like my why, I realized I have a right to be here. I have a right to express myself often. I can't even say the word now. But I have a right to do that. And I'm creative. I have gifts. I have a right to express them. I love creating connections and relationships. I know what my baseline is, and that's my comfort zone. But I also love exploring myself beyond that. You know, even if my personality is intrinsic or is introverted, I've realized that I can step out of that and still enjoy things. So it's this exploration of life. I have this right to explore who I am. I have this right to explore this world, what it has to offer. And that's my why, you know, to live that. And I know that if I operate within my values, then it just nourishes my soul. And my goal at the end of this life is to die empty, to have laid it all out there. You know, Les Brown says that the richest places on earth are cemeteries.
Yeah, the graveyard.
Poems that have never been written, songs that have never been sung, inventions that have never been made. And I feel there's two important things to life. One, the golden rule, treat others as you'd like to be treated. And then two, to be a good steward of your life. And I endeavor to lay it all out there. You know, I want to die empty. I don't want to die with regrets. I'd rather be foolish and have at least tried and expressed the things that were on my heart and dreams I had and pursued them. Whether I achieve them or not isn't even actually the point. It's to live authentically and it's to express myself. I have that right. I'm here for that. And everybody is. I truly believe that.
Mm. I love that approach to die empty. It sounds a little bit morbid, but it's so true. Like, why keep anything back? Why hold anything back? Because exactly. When the time's up, it's up.
It's true. And the reality is we don't know when that's going to happen. And whether you're religious or not, we don't know what happens after we die. And I know I'm not trying to get like super spiritual here, but all I know is that where I'm going to exist for sure is in the memory of other people. And I want to leave a legacy of just truly who Veronica was. I don't want people to wonder, who was she? What was she really about? I want to be known in their hearts and their minds. And I feel that that's really our mission. And your legacy is how people remember you, and let yourself be known so that they'll be able to write something about you on your tombstone.
Mm. Have you always had that desire to leave a legacy though? Or if you were to look back, where has that come from? Because I think it doesn't start in childhood. You don't think, oh, I want to have a legacy when you're 9 years old, 12 years old, 13 years old. I feel like it develops as you become an adult. Can you remember the moment where you were like, I want to leave a stamp? I want to leave my mark? Can you think of that?
I personally, so I had a spiritual experience when I was a teenager. And I actually don't talk about this too often. I don't think I've ever really told anybody except for like some close friends or, but I did grow up in a Christian household. Now I'm not religious, I'll be honest with that. But I remember one day, I just felt like I wasn't being a good Christian. You know, I wasn't doing things by the book. I wasn't reading my Bible. And I was like, I don't know, like, God, am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? And I was like, you know what? If there's something to this, then you're going to have to show me, because I don't feel like this sense of like, who I am and like what I'm about and why we're here. Like, I don't feel that. And I went to bed, and I remember the next morning I woke up and I set my alarm, I think for about 7 every day. And I'd always let it snooze. And I never woke up and did my morning practices and any of that. I woke up that morning, the alarm didn't go off, and it was straight on like 7 AM. My eyes just hit the clock. And then I sat up in bed and I had a weird feeling. I was probably 14, 15, like a sense of just warmth. And I walked around the house. I saw my mom, said hi, good morning. And it was just a sense of overall love, and just everything glowed and everything just was alive around me. And I even like opened up my Bible for a moment. I looked at it and it just like, it hit me so hard. I closed it. I was overwhelmed with emotion and love and just appreciation for life. And that feeling lasted for about 3 months. Now, this was when I was 14, 15. I had this experience. And I mean, I didn't try alcohol until later. I was, you know, grew up in church. And the only other thing, like, I did MDMA. And that sense of like that feeling of love and community and connection and being part of something bigger, or that there was something greater out there. That's the only thing that came close to it later on in life. And so I had that personal realization that there was, you know, something beyond just me, and that there, everything was connected and everything did matter, and that I was here for a reason. And I don't think, you know, purpose is necessarily one thing. I think it's dynamic and it changes over life, and it's in many different categories of your life. But I genuinely feel that you have a mark to make on this world that nobody else can.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I appreciate you sharing that. I really do. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I think that's a great way for us to wrap things up. I've really enjoyed speaking to you, and I'm sure all the listeners have too. If they wanted to find out more about you, we're obviously going to put the links in the show notes over to your Instagram, if that's where the best place is to find you. But where can people check you out, Veronica?
So it's Veronica Abrams, Veronica spelled with a K, Abrams, A-B-R-A-M-S. So at Veronica Abrams on Instagram, at Veronica Abrams on TikTok. And you could definitely connect with me there. And thank you so much for having me. And this was really lovely.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy it, I'd be really grateful if you could leave a short review on one of the platforms. And if you're a personal trainer in a commercial gym with 500 plus members and you want to fast track your income growth and learn how to sign multiple new clients a week, reach out to me personally through Facebook or Instagram and just drop me a private message so we can get the conversation started and see if you could be a good fit for one of our programs. All the links to my social can be found in the show notes so we can connect there. See you next week.